Raising the Bets is brought to you by the StarQuest Production Network and is made possible by our many generous patrons. If you'd like to support the podcast, please visit sqpn.com/give. You're listening to Raising the Bets, a family podcast of pirates and penguins. We're a Catholic couple raising five kids outside of Boston. Join us as we share the joys and challenges of marriage, homeschool, and our adventures near and far as we make sense of the world and experience the best parts of our culture. I'm Dom Bettinelli.
And I'm Melanie Bettinelli.
This week I'm focusing on that sentence, we're a Catholic couple raising five kids outside of Boston. It's almost like we're defining ourselves as outside of Boston. We're really not in Boston, so...
Right.
We're raising them outside of Boston. Anyway, it's a weird day. So what's been going on? Well, the weather's been nice today. Let's talk about the weather.
Yeah, because that's always exciting.
Always exciting when podcasts start talking about the weather. No, trust me, folks, we have some fun stuff to talk about. But I just wanted to point out, like, it was a glorious autumn day today. Like, so we've had a week of rain. It's basically rained since Tuesday.
Yeah, it's been rainy.
Yeah, I mean, it was cloudy on Tuesday, but it's been raining ever since Wednesday. And in heavy rain with lots of wind. It was like, the storm even got a name. And not one of those Weather Channel names. This was like a real National Weather Service name. Like a hurricane name.
Melissa?
Melissa. Sweet Melissa. Melissa, the whales need you. That's the kids love the Melissa McCarthy. What was it? Hyundai ad. It was a car ad in the Super Bowl a couple years ago.
Uh-huh.
It was hysterical. I still laugh at it. But Melissa, the whales need you. Okay, never mind. Anyway, Melissa, the storm Melissa, was rain for days and days and days. And then...
And wind.
Even yesterday, like in the farmer's market, was like... the most of it had passed, but it was still like misting, like really heavy misting.
And all the poor farmers, none of them could put up a canopy.
No, it was still
too
windy. Now.
It was too windy.
Yeah, I mean, it was a sad looking farmers market. It was sad.
It was really sad.
Yeah, I felt bad for them, but
they obviously felt bad for us too because we were given a free bunch of turnips.
Did they feel bad for us, or were they punishing us for coming? What was second prize? I mean, what was first prize? Never mind. Actually, though, that was a funny story because Isabella was standing there going, "Mom, can we get turnips, please?" Because we had made those really yummy turnips and carrots last week. And
yeah,
and the farmer was like, "Oh, those are on me. If I see a kid who's begging for turnips, you can have them for free." Which, yeah, it's funny. That's our kids. Bella liked them. They were really good. We'll talk about that in a bit.
They're a nice tender salad turnip.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, so the weather was beautiful today, though. As we were driving around, just the trees have started turning. There's still lots of green trees, but there's the other trees are the glorious oranges and reds of New England fall. I mean, it's just really, it's mid-October in Massachusetts, so that means the leaves have turned, and it looks really great. So we should follow up on our other stuff that we've been talking about, the saga of the Ben. Poor Ben. I mean, you gotta feel bad for him. I don't want to go on and on and on about it because after a while it gets really sad and pathetic. But for us to talk about it, but he's still suffering. He still has trouble breathing, especially at night as he's trying to get to bed and first thing in the morning. One of the things that we tried this week was did we replace his pillows or just get new?
Hypoallergenic pillow covers, but I also washed all of his bedding on hot water.
With hot water, yes.
Yes.
And it doesn't seem to have helped yet.
No.
I think the next step is replace the pillows and replace the mattress.
No, I think the next step is go back to the pediatrician. Well,
yes. I mean, but as far as the bedding goes, but yes. The next step is we have to call the pediatrician and say, look, the asthma is okay. Is under control. The infection, the sinus infection they were worried about isn't there or is gone. This is the rest of it. The mucus that he's having trouble with that is keeping him awake at night. The kid is staying up till 11, 12 o'clock at night every night. I mean, it is hard. It's hard for him. And I mean, this was the kid who, if he wasn't in bed by 8, it was melting down.
Yeah.
So
it's been brutal.
It's been brutal. So, you know, prayers for him if you can, please. He really needs your prayers. And it's become, there's a spiritual component to all this, I think. And we really need to call in an airstrike from some pious holy nuns, I think.
That's a good idea.
Yes, we should call in our pious holy nuns. Someone was telling me it was a Boston priest who would refer to asking this community of sisters to pray for an intention. He called it calling an airstrike. So that's what we're doing. We're calling it an airstrike. All right. So, but the big thing for this week, the big fun event was your day out. You had a day out today.
Yeah.
Tell me about it.
So there was a play in Boston.
Was it a Scottish play?
No. actually, it's Rosencrantz and Guildenstern Are Dead by Tom Stoppard, who is a British playwright. And it's a play
it riffs
on Hamlet.
Right. It takes two characters from Hamlet and does their story, a story about them.
It's sort of like almost a behind the scenes, like what's going on with these two characters when they're not on stage.
It's a Shakespeare spinoff.
Right. It's a really fun play. It started off sort of, I mean, this is sort of what Stoppard does, is it started off being just a sort of silly, goofy play, but then as he reworked it, he says, this is from the notes in the play program, as he reworked it, it sort of took on these like philosophical components. And so it's funny. It's very, very funny. But it's also kind of a play about like identity and, you know, how do we know who we are and how do we know what reality is and how do we know where we're going? I mean, these characters spend a lot of time philosophizing because, well, ultimately, they're very minor characters in a play that they don't understand who are killed for no very good reason.
That, you know, that's not a spoiler. It's literally in the title. Rosencrantz and Guildenstern are dead.
Right. yeah. And really, everybody seems to know it, except, where they're going, except them.
Yeah, right. In fact, do they know that they're dead?
No. They're not actually dead in the play. The play ends with their death.
Oh, okay. Okay.
It's actually a quote from Hamlet.
Okay.
So at the very end of Hamlet, the messenger from England comes in and he says, our news from England comes too late. The ears are lifeless, dead, something. The ears are something that should hear our news, that Rosencrantz and Guildenstern are dead.
And that's the end of the play.
And it's, if it's not the very last line, it's very, like, very near the end of Hamlet.
So let's back up a step and talk about, like, how you ended up at the play in Boston today.
Right. Yeah. So I have a couple of girlfriends who, one of them lives in New Hampshire, and I haven't seen her in...
These are college friends.
College friends, yeah. My friend Mary Kate from New Hampshire, I haven't seen probably since before we were married.
So
definitely since before she was married.
Hmm.
And then my friend Angela, who lives in Boston, but we just...
She's very busy.
She's very, very busy. She's a professor. She's got...
Five kids. Fairly certain it's five.
Anyway,
I could be wrong.
She has a bunch of kids. She teaches. She's busy. Anyway, so the three of us were sort of raving about, like, wow, this play looks really good. I think I must have shared a link on Facebook, like saying, ooh, look what's coming to Boston. And they both said, let's do that. And so it ended up with the three of us buying tickets. And my friend Mary Kate's husband, Matt, also came. I hadn't met him before, so that was also kind of fun.
So today, we went to Mass. I took the kids. Ben couldn't go again because he wasn't feeling good. And so you went to the 10 and went after that. You went to the, and you rode the train in.
Yeah, I decided I didn't really feel like messing with Boston parking and trying to find
a
garage.
Even on a Sunday.
Yeah. Anyway, just, and finding a garage, figuring out where to park.
In the, T is fine. You know, on the weekend.
I know how to get to from our house to the T station, and I know how to get from the T station, like on the trains. I know how to navigate without really having to think
and
about
it. And the garages, the suburban garages for the T on the weekend are usually
right.
pretty empty. So that's not a hassle.
And it was cheaper for me to pay for parking in Braintree and then take the T and then it would be to pay for parking in Boston.
Right.
And I get to, you know, sit and read as opposed to having to drive.
You were alone with no children.
I wouldn't say exactly alone.
You had no responsibility for anyone around you.
In fact, the train was actually pretty full. At least the Green Line trains were very full because they run a lot more staggered on the weekends.
Mm-hmm.
So we met up for sushi. I got there late because the trains were very slow on the weekends. Mm. But I got there in time enough to sit down, have a bowl of soup, finish off some sushi that nobody else wanted, and chat for a while before cool. we went to the theater. It was really fun. It was a great performance. I love this play anyway. It's one of my favorites, and this was a really, really good performance of it. And so it was very, I just, my only regret was that I didn't get any caffeine on the way to the play because I was so worried about like being late. And I was like taking little micro naps during act two. Like my eyes were just doing a very slow blink and I was kind of trying to pinch myself to stay awake. It's horrible. I hate falling asleep during like a movie or a play because like I've paid money.
Or the Deacon's Homily like I was today.
Yeah, I probably missed most of the homily. But yeah, I mean, I really hate, and it wasn't like I was like sound asleep with my head on my chest or anything, but like I was doing, I missed some.
The long blinks.
I missed some lines yeah. here and there.
Yeah. Well, it's middle age catching up to us.
But it was a very nice day out. It was, that's awesome. I like going into the city. It's fun.
That is great. And the kids missed you. I mean,
yes, I walked in the front door and I was mobbed. I like that.
Oh, I kept having to call them back to the table because they were staring out the window. I'm like, I'm looking at your phone moving closer from because, you know, I follow and find my friends. And I'm like, she is still way over by the Stop and Shop. Like, she's not even near here. Sit down and eat your dinner. Oh, they still missed you. But we had fun. So I made pancakes and bacon this morning, as you know.
Mm-hmm.
And yum, then yum. After you left, I finished the crossword puzzle, which was...
Oh, you do the crossword puzzle without me.
Well, they had the double crossword puzzle today. They had the easy one and then the harder one. So I did the easy one. I'm not sure I could even do any of the harder one now. If that's the easy one, I don't know what I want to do the hard one. That was hard.
Maybe you got it mixed up.
Oh, no. It says it right on the page. That's it. I decided to, I didn't want to, like, there was no pass game today, so there was no reason to sit and watch the TV. And because I don't watch the other football games when the Pats aren't playing. I'm a Patriots fan. I like football, but I'm not a football, like, sit down and watch just anything fan. So Pats weren't playing. They played Thursday. So I was like, I don't want to spend all day sitting inside on this beautiful fall day. So let's go and do something. So I decided to run some errands. I thought, you know, we could have gone to a park or something, but I decided to run some errands. So we went to the fancy outdoor mall in the fancy town, a couple towns over, the Derby Street Shops, which has all the fancy stores. I'm trying to think of, like, I don't even know what the names of fancy stores are anymore. Not that I ever knew, but you know what I mean? It's like they come and go. They have full of women's clothing that... I think there's a Lululemon over there. Anyway, we didn't go to Lululemon. We went to Apple Store, had to do something there. And that was fun. There was one funny exchange with the Apple Store employee. I love going because I got to be honest, I'm more of an Apple geek than anybody in there. Like, I have been using Apple stuff longer. I know probably more about Apple stuff than most of the floor guys. So, like, the geniuses, they know more. But anyway. He's telling me about Apple TV Plus. He's like, "Hey, have you heard about it?" I'm like, "Oh yeah. You're gonna get a free year when you know with your new phone that you got." Yeah. That's right. I know. He's like, "What are you looking forward to any of the shows?" I'm like, "Oh, I don't know. Maybe that C with Jason Momoa." He's like, "I'm looking forward to Dickinson." I'm like, oh yeah, my wife's a English literature professor. I'm sure she'll love that. I'm like thinking, you're gonna hate that show. So it's Emily Dickinson. They've updated her. She is, woman, hear me roar, Emily Dickinson. Which is entirely the opposite of actual Emily Dickinson.
Do they actually know anything about Emily Dickinson? Like, hello?
Yeah, this is the what was that great kids book about Emily Dickinson?
Oh, it's just called Emily by Michael Bedard. It's gorgeous.
It's like,
but they call her the recluse.
Right. In this book, she is an introvert recluse. Like, oh my gosh. So anyway, so we went there and the kids had fun playing on the iPads and they were well behaved. It was, as most Apple stores are, very busy. And then we went from there to the Barnes & Noble, which is next door. And I got to tell you this funny, very cute story. As we're walking over there, our gaggle, I'm in the lead, and Lucy squawks from the back. Her sneaker had come off, and she's like hopping on one foot, can't keep up. And so I'm like, oh, I'm like, just put it back on. And Ben runs back and crouches down and fixes her shoe for her. And all of the people around all went, oh, it was very cute. And so we went in and we were looking at the remainders books. I love looking at the remainders, like the books that were ridiculously $50 coffee table books that no one bought, which they're now selling for three. You know, it's like who needs a giant book of combat aircraft of the world at $50? Like, I'll buy it for $3, which I have in the past. So we looked at some of those. Bella looked at Civil War books.
Of course.
Yes. She had fun. There was a book of the Civil War generals and had all their pictures on the front. And she had fun identifying them by sight. She's become a Civil War geek. We looked at all of the Star Wars toys. All of them. Everywhere in the store that there was a Star Wars toy, we found it. And we looked at it. There was a Poe Dameron X-Wing Starfighter toy.
Yeah, how much was that one?
I didn't even look. Anthony said, that's too expensive.
Good boy.
Good boy. And then we laughed over some fun books. And then we discovered that there's a new Mysterious Benedict Society book that we hadn't known about. As we were walking by, I looked down at the table. I'm like, oh, have you guys read this one? And Sophie was like, no, what is that?
I did not know that had come out. I
flipped it open, looked at the date. It was 2019. So I'm like, this must be new then. And so immediately three of them were like, in negotiations, who gets to read it first? Anthony says, I should be able to read it first because you guys always read all the books before I do. And that's not fair. I said, that's actually a good case. And then Sophie and Isabella pipe up and said, that's because you take a month to read it. If you let us read it first, I will read it in a day, and then Bella will read it in a day, and you can have it in 2 days.
Yeah, he's not as quick a reader as they are.
No, he's a deliberate reader. They are binge readers. Anthony is a savor the experience reader.
Right. He also usually has like six books going at once.
Well, yes.
I've
he's like
had,
you in that way.
Right. Well, I've had problems with him with like library books where he just will like linger with a book for like a month. And, you know, I'm like, sorry, buddy, this is way overdue and I can't check it out any more times. It's got to go back. But I haven't finished it yet. So, yeah, he's got a slow, and it's not that he's like really, really slow reader. Like if he wants to, and if he's just focusing on a book, he can read fast.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, he is a fast reader. He's just as he attention wanders among books. So we got that book, and we got a Star Wars character reference dictionary. Like, there's brief things about each character in Star Wars, because that's what we do. We buy Star Wars reference books. That's what I did, and they now do. And so at one point, we lost Isabella. So I'm wandering around the stacks of the giant Barnes & Noble, four kids in tow, going, Bella, Bella, like trying not to say it too loud, getting a little nervous after the third circuit, not finding her. I was starting to think of a strategy of like maybe stationing children in strategic locations so that as I moved about, if they spied her, they could grab her and hold her. I was starting to think of strategically here, until Ben saw her. She was in the children's section sitting behind a stand-up display on the floor reading the books.
Yeah, she was reading.
Yes, she was looking at the Star Wars
books.
She was looking at Star Wars books.
Of course. When I lose her at the library, she's always like plopped down on the floor in the aisle reading books.
Right.
That's
what happens.
Why wait?
Yes. So we bought the books and we went over to Whole Foods, which is also there. I wanted to get some stuff for dinner and I also got some other stuff. So we got by coincidence, we had sushi for lunch too. We had the Whole Foods sushi. Anthony does not like avocado. So it's this extensive, you have to go through this whole process of negotiation is the word I'm looking for. Okay, so we got to get the tuna rolls, but those aren't just for Anthony. Anyone can have some, but we have to make sure that he has enough of those that he feels satisfied. But we also have to get the other kind that everybody loves, but then he can't have. And then how many of these do I get to make sure that they have enough here and there? And oh my gosh, I'm like, and after this, I will negotiate the SALT treaty and North Korea's nuclear weapons. Because it was like, oh my gosh, it's such a pain. But so we did that. And that was fun. They don't give you wasabi with sushi at the Whole Foods counter anymore.
They don't give you
wasabi?
There's
no wasabi in
there. That's sad.
Which is not real wasabi. I know. But, you know, it's still. I didn't get to do the Mater, joke about don't eat the pistachio ice cream.
Which is really the only reason why you wanted the wasabi
yes,
in the first place.
I know, because they don't want it. And I only want a little bit. So we got that, and we got some cheese. We tried out some cheeses. And Ben tried some of the cheddar, which is good. He liked some of that. There was this cheese that was spicy cheese. It was really they had a sign: "Beware, this is really spicy cheese." So I'm like, all right, because I'm a guy. So I decided to try it, and then Sophie tried some, and I said, "Sophie, take a bite. Don't swallow the whole thing. Wait, because the heat comes in a slow wave." And I'm like, "Yep, that's really spicy." And we were both like, oh my gosh, that was really spicy. And Bella's like, you're not going to buy any? I would throw it away. I can't eat all of that anymore, like these days. I can't eat that much spicy food.
Yeah, that's like the time we bought the ghost pepper queso.
Oh my gosh, it was so hot.
It was so hot. Like you would dip like the chip in. You couldn't even get the taste of the queso. Like it was all
just
pepper.
All heat.
Yeah. I think that we kept that in the jar in the refrigerator for months.
Yes.
Trying to maybe it will get better over time, and eventually I had to throw it away.
Remember the Indian spicy pickle pepper?
Oh yeah.
It was so spicy. It was so good, but so spicy hot. Like you could only eat a tablespoon at a sitting.
A tablespoon?
Maybe a teaspoon at a sitting. It was, well, you were a teaspoon. I would be like maybe a tablespoon. These days, it would be a teaspoon for me. Oh, my gosh. It was like, I finally threw that away when we switched fridges. I mean, it was just crazy. So we did that, and I got ingredients for tonight's dinner, which we'll talk about next. But so that was the day. And then we came home, and I played World of Tanks for an hour. And they did some Alto's Odyssey on the TV. And then I went and made dinner, which was fun. And this Lucy helped me with that. She's a garlic peeling whiz. She has this thing. It's those little fingers. She can peel garlic cloves like no tomorrow. So that was fun. So let's talk about, we've previewed it a couple times. Let's talk about what we've been eating. We said that we had this yummy pot roast in our too small Instant Pot. We've decided that our Instant Pot is really too small for full meals for our family.
Well, yeah, I mean, you keep showing me recipes for the Instant Pot, and I'm like, well, I can make a side of beans, or I can make the pot roast, but then have to add vegetables. But the Instant Pot, or well, pulled pork works, but something like a soup that's supposed to feed everyone.
Yeah,
we can't do that.
It's
because
it's a 6-quart Instant Pot. We usually, when you make soup in the big Dutch oven, that's 10 quarts. And we usually go through almost all of it.
Right. And in fact, I've been pondering getting a new Dutch oven because 10 quarts of soup is frequently not enough.
Right. We run out of some of the favored soups, like the Asian noodle soup just runs out. You're right.
Well, that one has more broth and less substance,
yes.
I think.
You're right. I mean, I thought about there's an 8-quart Instant Pot, but I'm like, do I really want to buy another Instant Pot, and then I had to go out and get another new of the R2-D2 wraps that I got for the Instant Pot. Check out my Instagram for that, folks. But so you did make a pot roast in it.
I did.
And it was so good. They all were like going crazy for it. So what did you do to the pot roast?
This was like a week ago.
Well, we had the chuck roast, threw it in there. You had some liquids. Would you put some wine?
I think it was like red wine, soy sauce, and Worcestershire sauce.
Yes.
Yeah.
Garlic powder, onion powder.
Maybe some like thyme, bay leaf.
Yes, thyme and bay leaf.
And
Do you brown the meat in there?
I do. I put the Instant Pot on settee and I brown the beef on all sides.
Okay. And then
give it a nice crust.
And that's when you put all the other ingredients in, you seal it up, you put it on.
Yeah, some onions and garlic chopped up. So yeah, what I usually do is I cook it like maybe an hour and a half or something. I don't
know. On the Instant Pot steam. Yeah, the pressure.
Under pressure, right. And then I add the vegetables that, like, I don't want to be total mush, the mushrooms and potatoes and carrots and stuff. I add those and then I do it for another like 5 minutes.
Right.
It doesn't require a lot of time to cook those.
That's actually a really good, because when we did it the other way, we just throw everything in at the beginning. The vegetables do really become like a mush, tasty mush, but really it's really not, the texture is not good. But this way, they still have a bit of bite to them. They actually taste like feel like the vegetable that they are. So, and the taste was real good. I mean, the kids loved it. They were crazy for it. So that was good. The thing about pot roast is, like everything else, you buy a big roast, but when you're done, it's smaller. It loses size.
Yeah. I have in the past, I've bought two small roasts because they haven't had one big enough. This one was, I think, like 3.5 pounds, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, we could even get a bigger one, I think, because there were some leftovers, but I think I think we could have had more leftovers. It would be good. You know, there was a little bit of who gets to have the leftovers.
Yeah. Yeah.
So the other night you made pea soup for me, which is very nice because you're not a fan so much of pea soup, but you know I am.
I don't love pea soup. I will eat it. I have even ordered it.
Mm-hmm. At a restaurant, yeah.
At a restaurant. Actually, I ordered it at a restaurant in Amsterdam.
Well, that's, if you're going to order pea soup out at a restaurant, that's where to do it, is the Netherlands. It's the national dish.
Is it?
Practically.
Anyway, I was really, really poor in Amsterdam, and I basically walked into a cafe, and I got, like, I think it was, like, a grilled cheese sandwich, or maybe even just a piece of toast and a soup, and that was, like, all of my money. This was, of course, back when I was in college, and there were no euros, so when I went, I was traveling for, like, school break. And, so if I went to like the Netherlands for a day, I had to, you know, I had traveler's checks.
Oh,
they came
gosh.
In denominations of 20.
I
so,
hated
like,
traveler's checks.
Right. So I could change, you know, a $20 traveler's check into Dutch kroner, or I could change $40, you know, to $20 and get $40. Well, $40 was sort of beyond my budget for a day, but 20 was really, really tight. So I didn't go to the Anne Frank house. I like found the Anne Frank house and stood across the canal from it and like waved, "Hi, Anne Frank house. I'm too poor to go in." Yeah. So that was my Amsterdam experience.
Nice.
I did go to the Rijksmuseum, which has all the Rembrandts in it. And I went to the Van Gogh Museum. Obviously,
those were free, weren't they?
I think I had to pay for the Van Gogh Museum. One of them I had to pay for. Mm. I spent my money on art and pea
Not
soup,
food.
But very little soup. Yeah, this was sort of a theme.
If as from Father Roderick, I know that pea soup is the thing in the Netherlands. So
it was good.
Wise choice. But you made pea soup for me. I mean, let's just say, you know, I mean, you enjoy it, but. but you know,
I had a bowl. I had a bowl, and yeah. I think each of the kids maybe had a bowl.
See, I remember. See, my memory of peach soup goes back to the restaurant chain, the Magic Pan. Now, if you're of a certain age and lived in certain parts of the country, not just New England, I gather. I think it was bigger than that. It was more multi-regional, but it wasn't the entire country. But it was this creperie, a crepe restaurant. Granted, this was the late 70s and early 80s. So crepes were sort of, you know, along with fondue. You know what I mean? It was the thing. I'm waiting for them to come back, like crepe restaurants.
Isn't there one in Brookline? I think there is.
A Magic Pan?
No, just a crepe place.
So the thing that, there were three dishes, three things at the Magic Pan that I really liked. There was the pea soup that they served with a glug of sherry and a little sour cream, which it was amazing. The spinach salad with bacon bits and egg. Again, this is the late 70s, early 80s. What is, and I was, you know, 10, you know, or whatever. What is this? This amazing salad. I just thought it was, this incredible dish. And a beef bourguignon crepe, which to this day, I would love to have another one of those because my memory of it is amazing. So, So you made the pea soup. And so when you make it, I always add in some sherry. Although we didn't have sherry. Did we have sherry this? We did have sherry.
We had sherry.
A little bit of sour cream. What else did we add to it this time?
Scallions.
And I'm trying to think if we had put anything else besides the scallions in.
I don't think so.
No, I think that was it. You made the garlic croutons.
Oh, that's right. I had some leftover baguette from our fancy French bakery that sells at the farmer's market. And
it lasts a day.
Yeah. The baguette doesn't last very long because, of course, there's no oil in it. It's just flour and water and salt. And some days we like devour an entire loaf. And then some days, for whatever reason, like we go out to lunch and so that there's we don't eat it all. And it just goes bad and it's stale and gross, except it's really, really good for bread pudding and croutons. And I made both of those this week.
Oh, my gosh. The kids love the bread pudding. It's soft and rich and underneath. And it's got a bit of a crust and crunchiness, like a toastiness on the top. And yeah, they're like, mama's making bread pudding. This is the thing. It is amazing. So we had that. And you made the garlic croutons for the pea soup, which was a really great idea. I mean, it knocked that up a notch.
They were like garlic and Parmesan cheese. I crushed up some garlic and I put it in some butter and olive oil,
mm-hmm.
and then tossed that with the bread and some Parmesan cheese and some like herbs.
It was good. They were really good on their own. It was like really good garlic bread, and then tossed into the soup. That was even better. Today. Speaking of things we made, I made since I was making dinner for the kids, I decided to try a new recipe from Milk Street called spicy stir-fried cumin beef with cilantro. And so the spicy part, they have the little red dried chilies that they want you to put in. I had some chili to arbol, which I used instead. They want you to put it in, and you kind of heat them in the pan, the pods.
Mm-hmm.
And you kind of coat, so you get them all, you know, the essential oils activated in it. And then you throw it in the bowl and then you pile the ingredients as you cook them on top and mix them together. So they're not really cooking in it and they're getting the heat from them a little bit, just sitting in the bowl hot.
In
a serving bowl or the prep bowl. So as you cook the food, as you cook the ingredients. You know, with stir fry, you cook them one at a time. So as you cook the ingredients, you move them from that into the bowl where the chilies are.
But you don't cook the food in the chilies at the same time?
No, because then it would be too spicy.
Okay.
So now, one of the things I said was like you break a few of them open and you let the seeds out. I knew enough not to do that. And I also, I did take the pods out before the recommended time. I didn't want it to be too spicy. I wanted just a touch of spice.
That's wise.
Yeah, I'm learning. And
slowly,
of course, I made another mistake. It tasted really good. This recipe is really good. My mistake was I bought cilantro today at Whole Foods and forgot to rinse it.
It was very gritty.
It's very gritty. And it's really disappointingly gritty.
Yeah, things that need to be rinsed are like spinach and cilantro.
Well, I mean, we get the spinach at the Stop and Shop. It's usually fine.
The cilantro, you mean?
Sorry, cilantro at the Stop and Shop. Yes, the Stop and Shop. The cilantro at the Stop and Shop is usually fine. You don't usually have to rinse it, but yeah, at the Whole Foods you got to rinse theirs. They're organic, quote unquote. Cilantro. I'm still dealing with. I feel the grit in my teeth right now. It's really disconcerting. Half success. I'd say the recipe itself is a good recipe. I made a mistake.
User error.
They would say. That's what user error. Operator error.
Operator error. That's right. That's what I was looking.
User error would be if the diner did something stupid, which that can happen.
I suppose.
All right, so let's move on to what we've been reading and watching. I've evidently been reading and watching more than you have.
I'm sort of stalled out in the middle of a few things, but nothing that I have enough thoughts to really talk about yet.
All right, well, let me quickly go over some of the things that I've been reading and watching. There's a new Jurassic World short film. So the guy who's been directing the Jurassic World picture, so you have the original three Jurassic Parks, then interval of 20 years, and then you had the Chris Pratt Jurassic World movies, which I've only seen the first one. I haven't yet seen the second Jurassic World Kingdom something Kingdom Come. Is the second one. There's a third one that's in production, but they made this short film in between, which it's classic Jurassic Park, which is it starts with a family. It's always about family,
mm-hmm.
camping at night in a campground somewhere out west, typically among, tall sequoia-like trees. Not as big as sequoias, but that sort of tall, pine-ish, deciduous. I don't know what I'm saying.
Deciduous is like the opposite of pine.
It is. I know. That's what I'm saying. I stopped myself. But it's clearly like one of these camping among the trees in sort of an open camping. That's what I'm trying to say. Out east, for those of you who don't know, almost all camping is done in clearly defined campgrounds where there are clearly defined spots for your tent or your camper. Out west, they often have open camping where you just go into this place and you find a spot and that's where you camp. And that's kind of it's obviously what this is. And so you have this family and there's some other campgrounds and it's nighttime and you have these two little kids and the mom and the dad. And evidently, in the last movie, the dinosaurs got out of someplace on the mainland, and they're running around out in the wild now. That's a thing. It's just people just know this, which is why you wouldn't be like in behind giant walls all the time now. Then, like, I don't know.
If there were dinosaurs outside, I would definitely not be camping.
Well, right, because like, some stegosaurs wander in. They go, it's kind of scary, but they're herbivores, so no big worries. And then suddenly, some T-Rexes show up, and they wreck everything. I mean, it's just like the scary, like. It's a scary. The baby's in jeopardy. They've got to save the baby, the little kids.
Wait, they took a baby camping with T-Rexes?
Yes. And the baby cries and thus attracts the attention of the T-Rex, the whole thing.
Oh my, I could not watch.
It's very tense and stressful.
I could not watch this. No, not babies.
For an 8 or 10 minute short, it was well done. But it's and very much in the line of this is Jurassic Park. But yeah.
No, thank you.
So that was good. I recommend that. I'm still working my way through the Dark Crystal prequel series. I'm kind of gritting my teeth, pushing forward. Still having a hard time with the Uncanny Valley puppet thing. Trying to buy like these little like puppets as great warriors and that whole thing. I don't know. I'll push through. I should probably go back and watch the original movie. That might help.
That's an idea.
I mean, I saw it when I was a kid. I just haven't seen it since.
But yeah.
So I saw that. I'm doing that. And then I watched Spider-Man Far From Home last night, finally. I finally got a chance to watch this new Spider-Man movie. It's actually a very wholesome movie. Your high school kid. It's very much a combination of a superhero movie with a high school kid romance, first love, like movie, dating thing, and so they're traveling through. It's sort of like a a road movie. It's not sort of, it is a road movie. They're traveling from New York to Venice, to Prague, to Paris, to London. You know, it takes
a Spider-Man road movie.
Yes, because he's on a high school summer trip, Europe trip. They're on a special European tour for their science academy. I don't know. And so don't push too closely. Don't dig too deep. It doesn't hold up. So, and Spider-Man, you know, he has this problem where, look, if people are going to start putting two and two together, you know, they're going to start noticing when Peter Parker's in New York, Spider-Man's there. And now, you know, when Peter Parker's in Venice, well, Spider-Man is there. And then when he's in Prague, he's there. Like, how is this working? So he has to come up with these ways around it. And it's kind of funny. And he's trying to keep his secret hidden from the girl that he really likes. But yet she, because he has to keep disappearing as Spider-Man, she starts thinking
why,
that something
is up. Why not just not do any Spider-Man missions?
Well, he can't. Because the world is in danger. And Nick Fury shows up. You know, Nick Fury is Samuel L. Jackson.
And I did not
know that. He's Samuel L. Jackson. He's the head of S.H.I.E.L.D., which is protecting Earth and runs the Avengers, essentially. And he shows up. It's like, hey, look, dude, you gotta tighten up. We got work to do. You got to save the world. Your little problems, your little high school problems aren't enough, you know, a big deal. At one point, he says, I did that as a Star Wars reference for you. I thought you might get that. And I'm thinking, wait a minute. Samuel L. Jackson was Mace Windu. So Star Wars exists in the Marvel Universe, of course, because it's a Disney property, right? A little cross promotion. But wait a minute. Nick Fury was Mace Windu. Like, how does that work? Maybe, Ms. Marvel explaining how Nick Fury lost his eye. He has an eye patch. It kind of explains it to us, but never. Let's set that aside for a second. Maybe Mace Windu didn't die. Spoilers for a 25-year-old movie. Maybe Mace Windu didn't die fighting the Emperor. Maybe he was just horribly injured.
That movie is not even 25 years old, is it?
Actually, that's Revenge of the Sith. I think that's like 2004 or 5. So it's 15 years old.
Okay, I feel really old now. So speaking of feeling really old, while we were sitting waiting for the play to start, Angela and I were talking about, like, how old is this play? Like, when did it come out? It celebrated its 50th anniversary 2 years ago. It was written in 1967.
Wow.
I did not realize that this play was that old.
It's like, it's positively ancient.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of 50-year-old things, I posted a picture of the church I was baptized in 50-plus years ago. I posted it on my Facebook page, and then Lauren, one of my Facebook friends, says, wait a minute, how old are you? And I'm like, I'm...
As old as the hills.
I'm 51 this year. She's like, get out of here. I thought you were like 8 years older than I am. I'm like, oh, that blade goes deep. I thought you were only 8 years old. No, I'm much older than that, I guess. I should take it as a compliment that I seem younger than I am. I think partly because I have young kids. Stay young. Get married late.
Have lots of kids.
Have lots of kids. I think that's aging me.
Yeah, it is kind of disconcerting because a lot of my friends got married right out of college and have kids who are in college now.
Or in my case, who have graduated from college and are, some of my friends are grandparents. That's really disconcerting. When you, like, I mean, 50, yeah. I mean, that's grandparent age when I was a kid. Oh, anyway. Last thing I read was, it was a book I read. I finished reading the autobiography of Jean-Luc Picard, which is a book we're giving away for patrons. It's one of the options that patrons for SQPN can get when they become a patron. I thought I should read it. I had read the autobiography of James T. Kirk, and they're really interesting. So they're written first-person perspective, and they sort of link together and fill in the gaps for the story of the life of these characters. So there's a Kirk, Picard, and there's a Spock one coming out next year, which they've had to keep putting back because Spock was in Star Trek Discovery. I feel bad for the author. They've probably been rewriting a lot of that one.
That's
because
that's
they
tricky.
Keep adding stuff. But with the new Picard series coming out in January, I felt like this, you know, I wanted to get caught up on this and kind of get this sense of who Picard is in the whole structure of things. And his, it's very interesting. It sort of gives you a sense of the man as the character of the man, you know, how he sees himself inside the character, because the author works with both the people who created Next Generation, but also Patrick Stewart.
So sort of getting into like, what do you bring to the character? Who do you think he is?
Right. And I mean, of course, all of this is really the author's own work and his, but I think it's informed by these other people.
I mean, I have to say that the Picard was one of my favorite characters ever. Mm-hmm. I watched some classic Star Trek with my mom, but really I was a Next Generation kid. Like, Next Generation was my high school and college. Like, it started when I was in high school, but like my freshman year in college, I would like hang out in the dorm lounge like every Sunday night when the new episode would air. And I was really happy to live in a dorm where there were a bunch of Star Trek geeks like me. but yeah, Picard, I always loved the episodes that really featured Picard. Some of my favorites were the ones where like he's on Earth, like in his family's vineyard in France. Like,
that's
really
a huge part of this book.
Right, I really, really liked that. So maybe I should check this book out.
You should, because there's some interesting insights in this about how he, you know, his relationship with his father and with his brother, how that has isolated him, and how certain decisions he's made through his life have led him to be sort of isolated near the end of his life. And it's interesting. And it kind of, what it does is it sets the stage for this Picard series now. So it'll be interesting to see where that goes from there. So I'm very curious about that. By the way, if you're interested in Star Trek at all, check out our other series that I do, The Secrets of Star Trek on SQPN. It's sqpn.com/StarTrek. Funny enough. So let's move on to, we had this topic that we were going to talk about, this sort of a bigger issue, and it's sort of related to my job as head of SQPN, but also it's a Catholic thing, which is the lectionary podcast problem. And to kind of give you the short form of that, it's hard to find. There are podcasts out there that have the lectionary, which is the readings from Mass, the scripture readings from Mass each day, especially Sunday. As you might know, the daily readings go in a 2-year cycle, and the Sunday readings go in a 3-year cycle of readings, and they match up. And it's hard to get a good lectionary podcast. In fact, SQPN had a lectionary podcast for many years. We had some troubles on that, which is part of the problem here, is we originally were using the translation. This is before I came to SQPN, so some of these details might be wrong, as I've been told them anyway, or as I remember having been told them. So take that with a grain of salt. That they originally used the version of the scripture that is used at Mass in the U.S. in English language.
The New American Bible.
That translation, not the Bible itself, granted, the translation of the Bible, the New American Bible, is that translation is copyright the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops. I'm pretty sure that's, if they don't own the copyright, they certainly oversee the use of that in the United States. And so the lawyer letter came and put the kibosh on that, and they had to switch to something else that was available. And I want to say they might have been using the Revised Standard Version. I think this is a Revised Standard, or the original Jerusalem Bible, but well, they used something else.
But nonetheless, people want to actually hear, if you're listening to, I at least speaking for myself, mm-hmm. if I'm listening to a podcast of the Sunday's Mass readings, I probably want to hear the version that I'm actually going to hear at Mass.
Yes. And we have the Divine Office podcast that we do, which is your PrayStation Portable, and that works fine, what we use for that. That's a different translation as well. And we've been doing that for many years, and it's wonderful. But we don't have a lectionary one. And so the USCCB, someone will say, they have a lectionary podcast you can listen to. It's not great. What are some of the problems that you had with it?
Now that you're putting me on the spot, I have no memory.
The way it's read, I think, might be part of it.
I think it's okay.
Okay. Is it? So we talked about one of the problems is the way these things get distributed. And this is a problem SQPN has with things is because you want people to have the readings before the day of, like if we only put the file for today in the feed at 9 o'clock Eastern time or 4 o'clock in the morning Eastern time, someone's not going to get it in time. Some people will get it, as you go further west, that'll be hitting them the day before. Some people will only be getting it at the end of their day. If they're say in Australia, it's a problem, that the time zone problem.
Right.
So what ideally you would have is an app that would release have already the recording and arrange it for you right then and there, just the ones you need for the day and time where you are, where it works. An app. SQPN does not have those resources.
Right. Yeah. So, right. I think what we were talking about is that the USCCB has a podcast, but it's not an app.
What they do is they end up releasing a whole bunch of them days and days worth at a time.
Like maybe even a month's worth.
Maybe a month's worth. And so you've got a month's worth of these episodes or however many days worth of these episodes sitting in your podcatcher, and you got to kind of go through them. Something always goes wrong where they're not quite in the right order, and you've got to find today's readings, and it becomes a hassle. And it's
right,
not
because
easy.
because they're all released on one day, the app
doesn't sort them by the date of that it's supposed to be the for.
Right, so it's actually sorting. I think it is
sorting by release time. Download time.
No. It sorts it by like the name of the day of the week. So like all of the Sundays for the month are together and all the Wednesdays of the month are together.
That's what it is.
And you have to like scroll down to find, okay, so it's a Wednesday. So I have to scroll down to the W's and then I have to like look through the four or five W's there to figure out which was today's.
Right. And so this is not an insurmountable technical problem. If someone just applied some time to this and a little bit of money to this, created some apps, some very basic apps, you could have electionary podcasts where you have people reading it, which would be great. I mean, what would people want to hear the scriptures? Why we want people want to hear the scriptures? Let's let them hear the scriptures. SQPN would do this. It would cost money. We could probably raise the money. People would probably give us the money to create the app for this. The problem is it's not just about programming the app. The problem is that the USCCB holds this copyright on not just on the New American Bible, but on the sacramentary, the general instruction for the Roman Missal of the Mass, the prayers of the Mass. Like all of the stuff is held in this iron. I run afoul of this myself several times on my blog. Right, publish an excerpt from this is what the General Instruction of the Roman Missal says. This is how we're to pray the Mass. You must take that down. And I'm like, I'm trying to help people understand the Mass and promoting the Mass and promoting the gospel. If I publish too much more than what they consider to be fair use amount of the Bible on my blog and write about it, it's like I couldn't reproduce like the Sunday's gospel there. If I put the Sunday's gospel on my blog and wrote a commentary, I'd run afoul of their copyright. And what we're doing is we're impeding the gospel. Now, from their point of view, I'll grant their point of view is we need to safeguard the scripture. We need to make sure people aren't misusing it, misquoting it, that they're not distorting it. And we need to support the cost of maintaining it. The doing the translation in the first place and the oversight that has to be done. But there are ways to deal with that just requires someone to have the will to do it. Brendan Vaught, if you haven't heard of him, he works with Word on Fire. He also has done some independence works and he's an author himself and he's technically savvy and he's come up with a proposal, which is that the USCCB should make the New American Bible and the General Instruction of the Roman Missal, which is the prayers of the Mass, available under a Creative Commons license.
Which I really like that idea. I use a lot of Creative Commons content on my blog. Like if I want a picture to illustrate, I know that if I search for images with some keywords and then click on like sort by usage rights, I can say, you know, find me pictures that are free to use.
Right. And so Creative Commons, when someone puts their information, their work out there under a Creative Commons license, they get to choose how it gets to use. They can say, you can use this, but you have to give attribution. You have to say this was, this belongs to so-and-so usually with a link. You could say you can do it, but you have to be not commercial. So you can't put it in an ad, but you can put it on your blog, or no derivatives. You can't take the work and change it and use it in something else. I mean, there are different restrictions that you can put it on. Or you can make it Creative Commons Zero, which is essentially like public domain. You get to use this wherever you want. The difference is with under Creative Commons, the owner of that work still owns it. They do not give up any rights. And they could change the license later. You can't take away the ability of someone who published something under the old license that you previously published under.
So you can't grandfather in your change.
Well, people are grandfathered in under the old license,
right,
when you make a change. Yes, right.
When you make a change, it doesn't. It's not retroactive.
Right. So, as Brandon says in his website, if you go to brandonvaught.com/free-word, I'll put a link in the show notes. He talks about the problem and the proposal, which is that, you know, we should release these under a Creative Commons license that will allow people to spread the word, to spread literally the gospel far and wide through all these different publishing means, keep them protected so that, you know, if someone misuses it, the owner of the copyright, in this case, say the USCCB, can say, you're misusing this material. You're distorting it. You're not following the terms of the license. You have to take it down. I mean, they still would have that ability. The problem is, I don't know. Is it the buck? Is it the almighty buck? Is it the lawyers who lawyers are inherently conservative?
You can't give this away for free.
Right. You know, so some people are probably saying, no, we get too much money in licensing. Catholic publishers probably pay a fortune in licensing fees for the use of the New American Bible in all of their Catholic books. So that might be a factor. Lawyers are, like I said, inherently conservative. They'll say, why give away the strong position that you have now? You should only do that under very, favorable conditions and so on and so forth. I don't know. So
it seems to me sort of antithetical to the idea of the spreading the gospel.
Yes.
Our great the Grand Commission.
Right. Jesus, go and make disciples of all nations as long as you follow the copyright rules of the USCCB and pay the appropriate licensing fees. I don't know. Yeah. So Brandon has some suggestions about charitably contacting the Holy See and the USCCB and asking them to consider a change. I agree with him. I think we should change it. And if we could use the translation of the Bible that they use for the lectionary, I would love to figure out a way to do a lectionary podcast app that gives people this content in a way that works for them.
And then you wouldn't have to listen to me complain about when I can't get my app to work. Because really, this is all about, like...
This is about Melanie. She can't make her podcast app work the way she wants it to.
Right. I'm not as tech savvy as you are.
Which is, given the irony of what her husband does for a living. And so what do you think, folks? I mean, do you agree? Do you see the logic? Does it not make sense what I'm saying? Would you like to see an app like this out there? Would you use it? What do you do? Do you listen to the lectionary or a Divine Office podcast of, like, whether it's ours, PlayStation Portable, or the Divine Office app, which they figured out a way to do the Divine Office in an app in a way that makes sense, although that doesn't always go perfectly.
No, actually, they ran into such copyright problems. And so it's only...
Everybody's grandfathered in.
People who are subscribed before they ran into copyright problems can still listen to the content, but there are no new subscribers.
Right. That's right. That's right. I happened
to be able to do it because I...
You were grandfathered in.
I was grandfathered in. And it kills me because people ask, well, what do you do? And I'm like, well...
I use this app that you can't have.
I use this app that you can't use because they don't let new people use it. And it's not their fault. Right. But it's a really good app.
Right.
I mean, although iBreviary is still free.
It doesn't read it to you. It's text.
There is actually a weird like voice-to-text thing that iBreviary does now.
You can do voice-to-text on anything on your phone, but yeah.
It's not great.
It's not good.
It's not like having a person read it to you.
Right. And again, PrayStation Portable podcast through SQPN is great. Jeff Vista has been doing this for more than a decade now, faithfully. And so great. I hardly ever have to do anything. He just does it all, and he's amazing at it, and I'm so grateful for him. And if you are looking for a Divine Office podcast, please check that out. It does suffer from these problems of, and we know this, of the app problem, and maybe we should explore that even just for that. Although I'm afraid of what would happen. We might get Divine Office app problems like they had. Because it is an app, and then we'd get shut down for some reason. I think we're okay with the translation he's using, but who knows? I mean, it's all arcane, and I'm afraid. So I'm going to leave things as they are. So again, let us know what did you think of this, and or anything that we discussed today. We'd love to hear from you. But before we finish up, I do want to take a minute to thank our patrons who make it possible for us to create Raising the Bets, including Chris G, David P, James L, Lee H, and James K. Their generous donations at sqpn.com/give make it possible for us to continue Raising the Bets and all the shows we do at StarQuest. You can join them by visiting sqpn.com/give. And so that's it from us. Let us know your feedback on any of this by commenting at sqpn.com/bets or the SQPN Facebook page, facebook.com/StarQuestMedia, or you can send us an email to betts@sqpn.com. Relevant links from our discussion are in our show notes on sqpn.com. Speaking of subscribing to podcasts, subscribe to this podcast if you haven't in Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher, TuneIn, iHeartRadio, Spotify, your favorite podcast app, or the SQPN YouTube channel, where you should make sure to hit the bell to get notifications of new episodes. Until next time, I'm Dom Bettinelli.
And I'm Melanie Bettinelli.
Thank you for listening to Raising the Bets on StarQuest.